Hello and welcome to Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. For this edition, we're coming to you on location from Ag in Motion near Langham, Saskatchewan. Today, we're going to be gazing deep into our crystal ball at the exciting and innovative future of high-tech farming. Later in the show, we'll be talking to PAMI's David Yee about the bleeding edge of agriculture technology and just how quickly it could start to appear on your farm. We'll also be talking to agriculture consultant Matt Gosling of Premium Ag Solutions about what it's like out in the field and how quickly farmers are adopting precision agriculture. We'll also have a report from Lisa Gunther of Grain News, who spoke to Warren Bills of Zavario, a subsidiary of Bayer Crop Science, about their new scouting app. First, though, we'll be speaking to Ag in Motion show director Rob O'Connor about this year's event. Rob, thanks for joining us.
I'm glad to be here.
So we're on the final day of the show, and it's been well attended and well received from what I've seen. That must be a real sense of accomplishment for you.
Yeah, it feels really good to be able to have a show that's grown so fast in just 4 years, and to have so many people come to the show. The attendance increased again over the first 2 days compared to last year's first 2 days. So I think the show, I can say it's here to stay.
Now, could you tell us a little bit about some of the show highlights this year from your perspective? What's been the real blockbusters?
Well, I think, you know, again, innovations is such an important part of any trade show. And here again, we celebrated innovation, whether it was the launch of the Morris Quantum Drill or the Disc Harrow from Schulte. I mean, those are some great Saskatchewan-made and designed products that are being launched right here. And then, you know, other cool things like U of S, they're launching some work on a chicken feed that uses Fusarium-infected wheat. And that, I think, that could create a whole new market for farmers here, too.
Now, I understand there was also a very special fundraising event for the Stars Air Ambulance Service this year.
Yeah, one of the things that we were really proud of, that we held what was called Field of Stars. And that was an event here on the first night with the purpose of fundraising for Stars. And what we did was have a live auction and silent auction, as well as Brett Kissel came for a performance. That all got wrapped into kind of like a gala setting. It was a bit more of an outdoors picnic-y kind of a gala, a little different flavor, more of an outdoors flavor. And after the night was done, including a contribution, major contribution from Canola Council, we raised $625,000.
And can I ask, why Stars Air Ambulance? What made that one the charity of choice or the organization of choice?
Well, to be honest, we like to work with multiple organizations. So you'll also see 4-H Canada here, the Rotary Club, Kinsmen, and yada yada. But in this case, Stars, there's a connection to with Stars from everybody that comes through the gate at this show. It's a service that really affects rural Saskatchewan. Whether you're a manufacturer, a dealer, a farmer, I would hazard a guess to say that every person that comes through these gates will be affected, either personally or have a friend or a family member who requires that Star service. So I think it's a logical choice for us to contribute in any way we can to keep that service going for our customers and ourselves.
Now, this is, I realize, a bit of a tall order, but any thoughts on how you're going to be topping this year's event next summer?
You know, if I let the cat out of the bag, then you might not think you should come back to the show. But no, I think we've had a great first 4 years. Next year's the 5th year anniversary. So we'll definitely be sitting down and planning some really amazing types of things to celebrate that accomplishment. We've had great uptake from the manufacturers, from the dealers, from the reps, and from all the farmers. And we want to be able to recognize that on our 5th anniversary, so we'll definitely be planning some really cool things.
That's great. Thanks so much for joining us, Rob. That was Ag in Motion show director Rob O'Connor. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We're coming to you live from the Ag in Motion show near Langham, Saskatchewan. Up next, we'll be speaking to PAMI's David Yee. He spoke to farmers about some of the incredible things coming down the technology pipeline over the next few years. David, thanks for joining us.
Now, you talked about some of what I can only describe as Star Trek stuff in your presentation. You talked about plant sensors that you would tape on. You talked about harnessing the entire biosphere as one gigantic sensor. How real is some of this stuff? How close are we to seeing some of that these applications actually hitting the field?
I think some of the ones that are probably smaller in scale really have a significant opportunity to them. We're seeing some of the smaller ones already hit into field scale trials. So the ones like plant sensors. So plant biosensors are actually, there's multiple companies already making those trials, and they're having significant success in them. The ones that are larger, where they're starting to think about the biosphere and that's really, really long-term and high science. But it would not surprise me, unlike any major high science research project, that the original premise in which they're chasing after, that they get a lot of value, and there's some real hidden gems that uncover along the way in that research.
You touched on that a little bit with the original Green Revolution and the Second World War. That's really what you're talking about, isn't it? The same sort of paradigm emerging?
Yes, absolutely. When you're seeing a lot of intelligent individuals, and they really want to think outside of the box. And that Green Revolution, its pinnacle was when they said, we can actually begin to safely alter the genetics of the plants. And we can alter them in a way that it is meaningful to that particular geography and that particular agronomy in that part of the world. And when they got to that level of resolution, that was a real boon to agriculture. What we're talking about is agriculture 4.0 is taking that resolution even tighter and tighter. And I think that exactly the Green Revolution and how we went in terms of research projects, so that is the same thing that we're doing. We have a model for innovation in humankind, and we're rinsing and repeating it. We just have a new toy, and it's a digital toy.
And what are some of the barriers to us really fully exploring and enjoying that digital toy? You touched on some of them, and one of the big ones, it seems, is connectivity.
Yeah, and that's what we have. You know, when you talk about innovation, it's funny, the innovation itself is often a multi-pronged fork, and it's when each of the tines come in lockstep, that the technologies unlock itself. If there is one tine on the fork that is short, oftentimes what we have to do as a society, as humankind, is to wait for that tine to advance far enough and long enough so it's at the same length and it's at the same position as the other tines of the fork. So there are some things. When we talk about digital 4.0, we need the connectivity. Everybody needs the connectivity right now. And the other part is that in the rural environment, everybody needs power, or they need devices that consume less power. So those are the two that we see that are lagging right now.
So in Western Canada then, what does the farm of tomorrow look like in your opinion, and how far away are we from it?
You know, I would say that the farmer of tomorrow looks like the farmer of today that we have. Extremely entrepreneurial. Very, very focused on the land, has a passion for the work that they do, and it's a passion beyond even business sense. But what they've taken on is they have taken business sense into their model, and they've taken technology in their model, and they're really using a very, very robust evaluation methods to make sure that that technology or that business practice, that agronomic practice, really fits into the land that they love and they know and possibly has even been passed down. So they have a lot of internal knowledge, and they have a lot of tribal knowledge about their land, and they're looking for things that will help even gain or make bigger gains and bigger profits for them.
And one final question. You had noted that there was a lot of opportunity, it seemed like, to sort of integrate agriculture further on into a chain that would connect them to consumer. Can you tell us a little bit of what that might look like to the farmer?
Yeah. So for the farmer, we think that a lot of these digital applications that are coming in, they're going to be so ubiquitous that they're going to be very, very comfortable working with their iPad, and they're going to be very comfortable working with their smartphone, and they're going to be very comfortable working with digital pads inside of their cab. Whether it's the cab of a tractor, a sprayer, or even a harvester. And inside of there, as they're going along, and because this connectivity and all of this technology is available, they'll be able to start to transfer information. So right now, the experience for the farmer is the information is coming to them, and it's in a read experience. We believe that into the future, the farmer can write. And that means that they can export certain things that they're doing, and that message that they export is a message that can be upticked or taken by the consumer. And if there is the highest form of farming we think that is, it's that our Western Canadian farmers who are excellent stewards of the land, have some of the best agronomy practices in the world, can start to message that out to all of the consumers worldwide, not only in Canada, but all of our export markets, to tell people how great our farming methods are and how trusted the products that we ship out with a flag of Canada is.
Well, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.
That was David Yee, PAMI's Vice President of Operations on the Star Trek side of farming. I'm Gord Gilmore, and you're listening to Between the Rows, coming to you from on location at Ag in Motion near Langham, Saskatchewan. Later in the show, we'll be speaking to consultant Matt Gosling of Premium Ag Solutions about the quickening pace of farmer adoption of precision agriculture. First, though, here's Grain News' Lisa Gunther, who spoke with Warren Bills of Zavario, a Bayer subsidiary, about a new scouting app the company says will be groundbreaking.
So tell me about this new scouting app released by Zavario.
So we launched the scouting app into the Canadian market here at Ag in Motion. It's a revolutionary app that uses photo recognition and artificial intelligence for instant identification of weeds and diseases.
So what kind of reception has it been getting so far?
We've had lots of people stop by our scouting mountain out in front. We've got some live weeds, some pictures, and I think the instant satisfaction of that identification has been really eye-opening for people to know that you can now use your phone, take a picture, and get a result back. The traditional tools are textbooks and catalogs and comparing pictures and scrolling through menus. And this, we've just created a very simple, easy-to-use app for anybody with a smartphone.
And I understand that it's the data is crowdsourced, is that right?
It is. We launched the Zavario Scouting app at Agritechnica last fall in Europe. We are now in over 90 countries, and we have thousands and thousands of users and hundreds of thousands of pictures flowing in. That crowdsourcing function improves the algorithm and the recognition for the diseases. So if you have a farmer in China taking a picture of a lamb's quarters and you have a farmer in Canada, they're actually helping each other out, and that's true crowdsourcing at its best.
I understand it also assesses leaf damage?
It does. So one of the most subjective things is if you look at a plant and you ask two people what percent damage is it, you're probably going to get two different results. And so we've implemented a feature that does measurement of leaf damage, which is green really versus non-green parts of maybe a flag leaf that has a disease on it or a chewing insect.
That was Lisa Gunther of Grain News speaking to Warren Bills of Zavario about their new scouting app. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host, Gord Gilmore, coming to you from on location at Ag in Motion near Langham, Saskatchewan. Now here's Matt Gosling, who works with growers in the Strathmore, Alberta area. Gosling says he's seen a real uptick in farmers who are embracing precision agriculture and estimates that over 80% of his customers are now precision farmers.
Great. Thanks for being with us today, Matt. Another thing you touched on in your presentation, I thought this was really interesting. You said your sense was that you've kind of reached a tipping point in your client base and that the majority of them, I think you said 80%, are now farming under what we would all classify as precision ag. Can you tell us a bit about that growth and what you've seen in the last few years?
The definition of the hockey stick growth has been very accurate to what we've experienced in precision ag. I've always taken pride in not being that pushy sales guy. If a grower does not want to do precision ag but still wants to hire our services, we'll work for them. And we will do things at a flat rate or in a non-precise manner. But we will always make them aware of what precision ag does. So we've got a lot of tools in the last few years from Trimble, AgriTrend, to help us show growers profitability maps. So we can segregate acres in a field that are continually not producing and do something different with them. We can put them into hay. If they're not going to grow grain, they should grow something, because otherwise they're going to grow kochia or grass or something that we don't want.
What are sort of the low-hanging fruit that the average farmer, maybe who's thinking that this is something they want to explore for their farm, what can they sort of start picking at?
The starting point of that climb up to Mount Everest, and the easy part of it is fertility. It's easy to measure, it's easy to change, and pretty well every drill out there can do it. We're working a lot with seed rate research and development right now in cereals. To see what is the proper rate to seed where. Should we be seeding high populations in this zone or low populations in that zone? So the work that got us kicked off on this last year, it was basically a $20 seed input decision. We had the same yielding or higher yielding crops of wheat and barley at a low seed rate versus a high seed rate. So if we quantified this by one bushel of certified seed at $12 to $15 a bushel plus seed treatment, that's a $20 an acre decision. Should we be variable rate seeding? Yes, absolutely. inter-row seating. I have no idea why. I'm sure that less than 10% of the acreage in the prairies is seeded inter-row. That is a really easy decision.
One of the things you touched on as well was the sort of nomenclature that's used. People talk about a precision farmer, and you talked about mechanized farmers, and then suddenly everybody was just a farmer again because everybody had a tractor or a steam engine. I would say the same thing happened with zero-till and conventional tillage. There really isn't conventional tillage. It's just the way we do business now, right? It's not really a different thing, a thing apart. How are we going to get there with precision ag, and do we need to sort of have a bit of a rethink as an industry about how we do things to get there?
Yeah, there are a lot of services out there that can employ precision ag. A grower should always want to see proof. I haven't met a farmer yet that says, where's your data and is it local? So the best sales pitch that has led to our success in the last couple of years to go from 20 to 50 to 80% precision practiced in our client portfolio is showing them. We do a field and show them the profitability. We show them a profit map. We practice variable rate and we put a dollar value to that practice. It costs money. It's more work. Just the more work you do, the more it costs. So are you going to make money at it? And once you show a grower that and they get comfortable in more uniform maturity of their crop and not putting 100 bushel barley fertility rate on a slough, or on an alkali patch. So one of the coolest things I can suggest to a grower, when we give them a zone management map, bring your iPad into the tractor, the combine, and have it, like an iPad is a very useful tool, and I don't know what, pretty well all of our clients have one. They watch themselves go through the field with their GPS signal. And the one guy said that it helped me with my combine speed. When I was in a red zone, I went faster, and when I was in a green zone, I slowed it down because there was more vegetation and more crop there. So, yeah.
So, and I will concede I'm asking you to kind of dust off your crystal ball for this. Do you have any sense of how far away we are from precision ag just being agriculture again?
It's happening pretty quick. I would say in the next 5 years. There will always be farms who don't practice precision ag. I work with some of them, and I can tell them 10 times from Sunday that it's the right thing to do, but there's always going to be that mentality.
Matt, thank you very much for your time.
You're very welcome.
That was Strathmore, Alberta-based agriculture consultant Matt Gosling with an in-the-field view of precision agriculture adoption. You're listening to Between the Rows, and I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore. We're coming to you live from on location at Ag in Motion near Langham, Saskatchewan. A lot of precision agriculture starts with an image of a field, but what's that image based on? Is it aircraft-based photography, a yield map, drone imagery? One intriguing possibility is using readily available satellite imagery as a starting point. Viviana Faria of Trimble was at Ag in Motion and gave a presentation on this technology. We caught up with her earlier in the show.
Viviana, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Gordon. It's a pleasure being here.
So tell us a little bit, if you could, about what some of the options are for farmers. And in particular, you talked about satellites in your presentation. Why satellites?
I think the technology nowadays is very broad, and it's amazing that we have all these options. I like satellites, or I would say my presentation was about satellites, because it's global coverage, right? So it's something scalable. You can take advantage of some free sources that's there, and it can cover your entire farm at once. So I know there'll be challenges around of cloud cover and how many images cloud free you're going to have available, but still a good technology to use as a first layer. So to guide where the problems are, which fields you should look at first, and where the locations with problems are. And then you combine other technologies to assist you with investigation. So if you want to do a drone flight, right, you do that just on the areas that has problems instead of flying all the fields.
So it's a bit of a baseline then, is really what I hear you saying.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. So it gives you an overall idea of your crop condition, which fields are having problem, and then you can make a decision on how to access those fields and investigate the problems better. Some people like to do the scouting, like still doing a lot of manual scouting, which is great, but you don't know where to go in the field, right? So if you have the satellite as a baseline to tell where the problems are, then your scouting is more efficient.
There are a lot of options in terms of being able to find this sort of information. You know, you were talking a bit about aerial photography, drones, that sort of thing. What do you tell to farmers who are a little sort of confused about where to start on this technology?
That's actually a great question. And I'm a big fan of everything. So all those technology has a place. But I think that, you know, farmers need to be educated on how to get the best of each technology. So sometimes they are misleaded that because satellite has some cloud issues, drones is the best solution. And, you know, it's gonna be way more expensive for them, you know, to have an overview for the whole field, the entire farm, I would say. So I think if they understand where each technology fits and what they can be addressing, then they pay more when actually they need to, you know, get access to more higher resolution imagery. So to me, satellite provides you a more coarse resolution and gives you the baseline. Then drones and airborne have more value when you have to dive into problems or having problems or applications that you need a very fine spatial resolution. So you will not have fine resolution from satellite, right? So the best you're gonna have is 1 meter, 1.3 meter. It's quite expensive though, WorldView, those kind of satellites. You know, 5 meter, 10 meter data or 30 meter data is there, and you can take advantage of those first and then let drones to guide you only when you need like weeds, if you want to do weeds assessment, or if you want to do plant counting to decide reseeding, help you on deciding reseeding, or some environment damage that you want to quantify and claim the government or some sort of things like this. I think drones and airborne have a very good fit.
That was Viviana Faria of Trimble on why satellite imagery might be a great baseline starting point for precision farmers. That's another edition of Between the Rows. I'm your host this week, Gord Gilmore, signing off from Ag in Motion near Langham, Saskatchewan, and wishing you safe farming.